The News, I'm Dave McGrath.
Morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Tomorrow, a very special performance is going to be taking place at the Civil War Museum in downtown. It will feature, among other things, a brand new work called Toward Justice, which celebrates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment of our Constitution. And this is going to be part of a really special program on a couple of different levels, and I'm really excited to be able to speak with two people who are deeply involved both in the creation and the performance of this new work, and with Ben Woods. Ben Woods has been on the morning show before because of his musical theater exploits, which are many people fondly remember from his time as a Kenosha Unified student. I think you call yourselves the Prairie String Quartet.
That's it.
And so anyway, this is a wonderful opportunity to encounter this work, which I believe before this has only been performed.
It's kind of a long answer, but I'll try to keep it as short as I can.
This is public radio.
Okay,
we have plenty of time.
Because it was a confluence of events and ideas that just came together at the same moment, and that's, you know, kind of a interesting thing in and of itself. Yeah. But several years ago, the quartet was playing concerts at the end of August in Grace Kolakowski's garden. I'm sure you know who Grace Kolakowski is, right? And 2 years ago, we decided to play a piece called Washington Camp. Hmm. But he was a very interesting composer, fusion of jazz and classical music. It sounds like he was a very popular guy in terms of who, when the Nazis were starting to move into various, or the UK was denied. So he made application to Russia. He was accepted as a, and on June 22nd, they picked him up and put him in a detention camp and then sent him to a concentration camp where he died. But the whole purpose of this is before he died, he put his political events that happened in Kenosha 4 years ago, so that's kind of always on our mind. And we were waiting for our rock guitar player to get there, and he was having trouble because the hospital wanted him to go back and do some radiology work. So we're just sitting around talking, and we said, let's write a piece about the Equal Protection Clause. And so it was all those things coming together.
Wow. So tell us about that creation process then. Once you decide there needs to be a piece that celebrates this, then how did it actually take shape?
Well, the first thing is that I actually ourself, then we can all write our own great solos. Because, as I'm sure you know, Greg, in string quartets, the first violin always gets the... But then, the other very important part was that I had come across Ben at a Mahone Scholar, I mean, who is a Mahone Scholar, but at one of the Rainbow programs, and got to know him through lots of connections.
A little bit about that process of actually choosing the words and shaping them into something really meaningful, I imagine.
And so there's a real, there's not a lot of words and clause should be applied. And one is a very famous, two cases, Plessy versus Ferguson, where versus Board of Education, which I think just about everyone knows about, which is where they said separate but equal is not equal.
Right.
But also learning, I will say this, so we were having trouble with it.
So what is the relationship between the music that the string quartet is playing and the words that Ben Woods, whom we'll talk to in a second, is reciting? You know, when you tried it that way, aligning with the composer's initial intentions, what felt wrong about that?
It just felt like there was no flow. You know, it was
played, for instance, as you are speaking, the music is a pretty direct reflection of what you're saying.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm not a poet, and in fact, I'm not really much of a great legal writer either. But you just get a sense of it can't be too much, it can't be too little, it has to be enough to actually complicate it. Mm. It has to be pretty straightforward. And I have to say that, Ben, I don't know what this piece would be like with someone who wasn't of the caliber of Ben Woods. I mean, he's really...
When I first came into this, it was more, I thought of myself as, okay, I'm just narrating, just reciting these words. But then later on, I begin to develop like a character to that as well. You know, who am I truly, and what am I here? And even so much so, as we got further along in the process, I seen something. So I was like, what if we ended the piece with the same chord that we started with? And we tried it, and it was amazing. I'm supposed to pose the questions to the audience, so they're leaving thinking about what is it that I need to do, you know, to make this change. So that's really how it's
decided. He thought he had this inspiration. We just all looked to him like, just tell us what to do. And it was great.
And that's the other thing that I've loved, just that willingness. Beautiful. I couldn't thank you guys enough for that. You know, like I said, I just came in thinking I'm just going to be narrating the
performance. How precisely similar or even identical. Well, Julia Nowicki, I want to really compliment you on something, just because I've been around the block enough to know that rises or falls on the libretto. And I think in so many cases when someone is inexperienced in that craft, the most common thing them from hearing them, you have to try to have a sense of what the typical audience member can take in. And not knowing what they're doing, and once in a while you kind of blunder into doing a great job, but so often, I mean, I just can't tell you how many new works I've gone to where the music was distinctive, but the libretto was really deficient. And I personally believe that those of you just joining us, we're talking about a brand new work called Toward Justice, which is going to be performed tomorrow at the Civil War Museum in downtown Kenosha, performed by the Prairie String Quartet, 19th Amendment. Ben, I wonder if you would do a
moment. Is that towards the end? And it's really part of Lincoln's second inaugural address. It's that very end where he says, with malice towards none and with charity for all, let us strive to finish this work that we are in, noting that we are still in the work right now.
But knitting the nations together. I mean, it's just extraordinary that Lincoln had the presence of mind and the sensitivity to. What difference does that make for you as the speaker in Toward Justice? I mean, his words are intoned by someone with, in a sense, your particular relationship to them.
Yeah, being a black man, I believe with my history and with my keep moving forward and to bring about a change. So it does make a difference, being a black man.
On February 3rd, there was a program at the Kenosha County Ceremonial Courtroom in relation to the Restoration Project. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, and it took, you know, it's amazing how long something takes.
In order to hear this piece. And I'm also really curious about these other two pieces. I was telling you before I went on the air that, for instance,
to say Florence Price and William Grant Still. And Still's quartet is much more popular. It's and they're both very easy to listen to. It's harmonious.
Although, thankfully, I would say
a former slave who took the Underground Railroad ended up in Canada, and they corresponded after she got there. And they have those letters, original. So they decided to hire someone to write the play, and you have the name of the play right there, and I'm
Jim
sorry.
Ferris.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so they commissioned that. And
you hear some very, very special music, including what it amounts to almost a world premiere, not quite, of this brand new piece called Toward Justice.
And actually, while I was there, I co-founded a orchestra for lawyers. And at the time, I
an
was...
An orchestra for
no,
lawyers.
Play, no, as the musicians.
So
comprised
lawyers,
of
okay.
A lawyer's orchestra, comprised
wow.
of lawyers.
Wow.
Right?
Okay.
And at that time, I was actually a Cook County Circuit Court judge. So we practiced in my courtroom. And so that was a lot of fun.
Wow.
We started coming up to this area, which was on at that point, my mother was still alive, was on the way to my mother's house.
Hmm.
We stopped in here, and we really loved the community. And so we're now residents of Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin.
Wow. And you have, I am one of them. Ben Woods, I don't know if your life story can measure up to creating an orchestra of lawyers.
Not at all. May of 2023, I graduated from Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas, with my BFA in theater.
Mm-hmm.
And when I moved to Kenosha back in August, I was with Holly Stanfield, and that was just like my introduction to the educational side of things.
Yeah.
And not just, you know, being the performer or the student, but actually being the director on that side. And she's a great woman.
What shows specifically did you work on this past year?
So we both co-directed Between the Lines.
Mm. I saw that and loved it.
And then Speakeasy there with the international students,
which
was an amazing experience.
Oh, great. Well, I'm so excited that... you'll be spending some time at Carthage where I teach. That's really, really good news.
Yeah.
So I remember the days when you were not only a force of nature on the musical theater stage, but a basketball star on top of it. What was it like way back when to be juggling those two endeavors?
Oh, my God. If I didn't do the arts, I would have done basketball or track, you know? And I really made that decision in high school. With Holly, which she said, I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Admission charge for this?
No, it's free. They would like you to register. You just if you can't do it online, call the museum, but yes.
So register ahead of coming.
Yes,
just so they have some idea.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That people will be coming. Very good. Well, what an exciting evening this promises to be, and I'm so glad that the two of you took the time to join me today on the morning show to talk about it, Julie in the Wiki and Ben Woods. And Julie, I want to give you an opportunity real quick to share the names of your peers in the Prairie String Quartet.
Great. Jesse.
Record with historian Ronald C. White, talking about his book Lincoln's Greatest Speech, The Second Inaugural, published by Simon & Schuster. At this point in the interview, Professor White is talking about the third paragraph, the longest paragraph of Lincoln's speech, in which he engages with the painful topic of slavery.
He talks about the fact that American slavery is an offense, and I argue that for the political and rhetorical midst, he says, if we shall suppose that American slavery is one of those offenses which in the providence of God must needs come, but which, having continued through his appointed time, he now wills to remove, and that he gives to both North and South this terrible war. Notice the both North and South.
Mm.
And then perhaps the most memorable words, except for the final paragraph, are these. There's been a great deal of debate in the last 20, 25 years about who freed the slaves. Was it the slaves or was it Lincoln? Does Lincoln deserve all this credit, or was he? The other most important person in my book is Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass is the great abolitionist African-American author, editor, speaker. And he's in the crowd that day. He had come to the first inaugural, bitterly disappointed with Lincoln's first inaugural, much too conciliatory. Now he comes to the second inaugural. Lincoln's assassination 41 days later. Communities gather all across the nation on that Black Saturday to offer eulogies. In Rochester, New York, a gathering is held. Three speakers are selected by the mayor to offer a eulogy. Douglass is in the crowd, and the crowd sees him, and they ask him to give a eulogy. He rises to speak on the Platt inaugural about slavery from memory. He quotes them from
Bible and pray to the same God, and each invokes his aid against the other. In the section of pictures in this book, you show... three Bibles. Tell us about that.
Yes, one of the most poignant parts of my research was to travel to the American Bible Society headquarters in New York City. The American Bible Society, the chief voluntary organization that which you could put in your pocket, small Bibles, and I held these in my hands. Very amazing feat. Lincoln is doing several things here again, as he always does. On the one hand, he's affirming the use of the Bible. He himself has been tutored on the Bible. And he's then questioning the fact that each side could appeal to the same God and appeal to a God to give them victory against another group of human beings, and not for the other.
And I particularly like the words where Lincoln seems to acknowledge the horror of war when he says, "Fondly do we hope, fervently do we pray, that this mighty scourge of war may speedily pass away."
Personal emotion in this speech, Lincoln is offering, he fervently, fondly, these are deep emotional words.
As we proceed to the brief final paragraph, I think it's good to say the single word which
paragraph. Which is to say that in a sermon, the first two-thirds or three-fourths of a sermon is the declaration by the minister of what God has done. That's the indicative. And then the last part of any sermon is always the imperative, what you and I are to do. And in a sense, Lincoln has laid out what has been done in judgment, but also in mercy towards preserving the nation. And therefore, there is a, therefore, we are to act.
Process of reunification of North and South.
Yes, as you suggest, it certainly would have been difficult and complicated, and yet Lincoln's attitude towards the South, and it's not a weak attitude, he wanted unconditional surrender, but then he wanted to treat the South in exactly the opposite direction.
Historian Ronald C. White, talking about his book Lincoln's Greatest Speech, the Second Inaugural, published by Simon & Schuster. We want to remind you once again that the new work, Toward Justice, will be performed tomorrow evening, that's Tuesday evening, July 30th, at 6 p.m., at Kenosha's Civil War Museum, with a reception beginning at 5:30. This event is free and open to the public, but the museum would appreciate it if you would register. Tomorrow on the morning show, Rochelle Winkle Wagner, the author of a very interesting book called The Chosen, part of how they were able to succeed as well as they did in the face of what often were difficult challenges and barriers. On Wednesday, you'll hear my conversation with Herschel Kruger and Maureen Kruger and two Carthage students, Maria Romero and Lorelei Amborn, who were on an extraordinary theater trip to New York City, seeing an array of plays and musicals there. And on Thursday, we will preview this. Cloudy skies tomorrow under partly sunny skies, a high of 89, heat index close to 96 degrees. Similar forecast on Wednesday. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, WPR.